This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Just before 8 o'clock this morning, a spokesman for White House Budget Chief Mick Mulvaney tweeted that Mulvaney was hard at work in his post as acting director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And according to reports, he brought donuts. Now, just a couple of minutes later, Leandra English sent out an email to the CFPB's 1,600 employees, and she signed her email acting director because she was appointed on Friday by the agency's former head, Richard Cordray, on the day he resigned. So are you confused yet? I mean, I was a little bit. So imagine how the Bureau's employees feel, because minutes later, Mulvaney sent out another email telling folks to disregard any instructions you receive from Ms. English. All this while a U.S. district court has taken up a lawsuit filed by English asking for a temporary restraining order to stop President Trump from appointing Mick Mulvaney as acting director. Now, Mulvaney has long been a critic of the Bureau. He's called it a joke and a sick one at that in the past. Now, I know this is a lot to take in, but stay with me because the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is perhaps one of the most powerful banking industry regulators out there. It was conceived by Elizabeth Warren before she became senator, and the agency has returned almost $12 billion to consumers since its creation in 2010 via the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform Act. Now, it's supposed to be relatively independent and insulated from political pressures, which, of course, is exactly the opposite of what's happening right now to the Bureau. Well, Congressman Barney Frank joined us in the last hour from New York City. Of course, he's the Frank in Dodd-Frank. And he says that he thinks this impasse over leadership at the Bureau is having a negative effect at the CFPB.
And unfortunately, until we can get a court resolution, and hopefully the right one, will mean a substantial reduction in consumer protection in the area of financial activity. There are bets you can get us a stalemate, but my view is that there'll be a certain momentum to the administration in power, and you have a man who's been designated by the president to run this agency, I think inappropriately, on both substantive and procedural grounds, but he may prevail, who doesn't believe in the agency and will shut it down. So what this means is that consumer protection, which got a great boost in the legislation we passed, and has profited from a very well-run agency, is going to be in limbo for some time.
Mm. You know, as you know, both the Department of Justice and even the general counsel at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau point to the Vacancies Reform Act of 1998 and say that that gives the president authority to fill the position of director once it became vacant last week.
Yeah, I think that's wrong. I was there when we wrote the law.
Yeah.
And there are 2 points here. First of all, the law we wrote is later than the Vacancies Act. The Vacancies Act was in effect. Apparently, their position is that when we wrote some specific language regarding this this agency, we were making up, we were just wasting our time. If the Vacancy Act was going to govern, we wouldn't have bothered to write that. In fact, it is generally the rule that when there's a law in the books and you then write a later law, that later law affects the changes. Secondly, the purpose of what we were doing was to give this agency some protection. It's not a normal federal agency that goes out and does affirmative and direct things. It's a protection for consumers against abuse by some of the most powerful interests in the country. And given that, we deliberately set out to give it some insulation from political heat. And this acting director provision is a part of that.
Yeah. So just let me ask you in a little bit more detail, because I'm just looking at, for example, what General Counsel Mary McLeod wrote on November 25th, the day after Richard Cordray resigned as director of CFPB. And, you know, what she says mirrors the DOJ pretty closely, as you know. You know, she says the Vacancies Reform Act is not exclusive, but it doesn't mean that it's unavailable. And so she's directing folks at the Bureau to understand that, she says, Director Mulvaney is the acting director of the CFPB.
Well, I understand that. That's what I was addressing. I think she's wrong.
Yeah.
Look, it's not as clear as it could be. I am surprised at the interpretation that says the earlier statute somehow. Well, I just heard a conservative who was against the existence of the agency, and that's why they want Mulvaney in there, because he will trash it, say, well, it gave the president an option. There's nothing in the law that says that. The law specifically says this is what should happen. I don't know why the general counsel interpretation did. There is a strong tradition in American legal interpretation that the president should always be given more power. I don't think that's always served us well. But in any case, I think she's wrong, and I don't understand how a law that was in existence when we wrote a later law means that we were just not serious when we wrote that law.
Yeah. Now, just so that I understand clearly, Congressman Frank, when you say that the law says this is what should happen, is that the outgoing director naming the acting director?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Because there are some folks out there who say that former director Cordray caused this problem by naming an acting director. I mean, he knew that the president had someone in mind.
The law calls for there to be an acting director. In their mind, Cordray caused the problem. I don't care why didn't the president cause it by naming Mulvaney. By the way, look how that looks. This is a man who's one of the busiest people in Washington. He's the budget director. He's supposed to be keeping the government running. So he's going to run this important agency, what, on his lunch hour? And in fact, he doesn't believe the agency should exist. This is not a narrow technical legal dispute. This is about substance. This is an effort by the right wing that does not like the notion of consumer protection, that wants to give Wells Fargo and other financial institutions free rein and not have them bothered by this consumer protection to get rid of it. And yeah, what Rich Cordray was trying to do was to protect this agency, but he was acting in accordance with the statute that he was governed by. Now, you could argue that the earlier statute somehow meant that the later statute didn't have any effect. I think that's an odd interpretation. But say he was causing trouble by following the statute. And most importantly, what he was trying to do was to keep alive active and vigorous consumer protection against a president who, having run as someone who was going to help the average citizen, has, of course, been doing everything he can to undermine the rights of the average citizen against the big interests.
Yeah. You know, to your point, Congressman Frank, I mean, as you said, there is a court case now that was filed last night, so this will get decided in the courts one way or the other. I just wonder if the longer term concern is that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has already been highly politicized, and this just makes that problem that much worse.
I'm astonished by that. Who's made it more politicized?
Well, not the Bureau itself.
Cordray should give up. I am just astonished by that. In the first place, what made it highly politicized? You know, the conservatives, the people who try to attack this agency, raise these issues about how it's been irresponsible, et cetera. Can you give me one example of anything the Bureau has done in its official program that contributed to that? I can't think of any. And I do know that its critics don't have any. So what has the Bureau done that has politicized this issue?
Oh, no, I wasn't mentioning that the Bureau itself had done anything to politicize the issue.
Well,
but
it's been politicized. Healthcare has been politicized. In other words, it is true. When you have people who don't like what was done during the Obama years, didn't like healthcare, didn't like consumer protection, didn't like financial regulation elsewhere, when you have people who don't like it and they attack it, I suppose it is true. It would be less divisive if you just gave in, but it would have a terrible result. So, no, I wouldn't characterize politicizing it as when you're trying to defend the agency that was existed.
Ultimately, though, are you concerned that no matter how this current problem plays out, that President Trump will get to name a new director? And if I remember correctly, in the statute, that only requires a simple majority for Senate confirmation.
Yes, of course I'm concerned. That's why I didn't want him to be president. And we all understood that if whoever was the president would get to make the appointment. But confirmation in this case, given that even that it has to be a majority, means something. There are, unlike other things that the president was against, this is a pretty popular thing in the country. You notice they haven't tried to change it legislatively. Going after Wells Fargo when it went and cheated people that way, that's a popular thing. Getting money back from people who've been overcharged by their credit card companies, that's also a popular thing. Defending students who have loans, graduated students who are being unfairly pressed to pay back more than they should, those are all popular. So the point is this. If President Trump were to appoint someone in the future, as he will have the right to do, who is as opposed to the whole notion of consumer protection as Mr. Mulvaney, I don't think that person would be confirmed. I think the confirmation process will be a check. Yes, there are only 48 Democrats, but Senator Collins from Maine is a Republican who voted for this bill. I don't think she will vote to confirm someone who will trash it. Senator Corker, well, he's retiring, but Senator Corker, Republican senator, was the man who came up with this notion of this independent agency under the Federal Reserve, not subject to appropriation. Mm-hmm. So, yes, the president will have an appointment, but I think in this case, even getting 51 votes will be something of a check. It'll be a more conservative appointee than I would have made or that President Obama made, but it will not be easy for him to get someone confirmed who is as opposed to the whole notion of the agency as Mr. Mulvaney.
Well, that's former Congressman Barney Frank. Congressman, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We spoke with the congressman a little earlier today. Well, let's get a different view now. This is from Noah Feldman. He's a professor of constitutional law at Harvard Law School. Professor Feldman, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
What's your take on what you just heard Congressman Frank say?
You know, I believe that lawsuits against the president for abuse of executive power are very serious things, and they should be saved for when they're really needed. And unfortunately, in this administration, we've needed them a lot because President Trump has overreached many times. This, in contrast, to my mind, is a wasted opportunity. It's a waste to go to the courts over this. First of all, it's largely symbolic because everyone admits that the president has the right to name the actual director, who will then be confirmed by the Senate. It convinces the world and the courts that the Democrats are using partisan maneuvering in the courts rather than waiting for a serious constitutional challenge. And in my view, it would have been much better if Richard Cordray had not used a last-minute maneuver to appoint Leandra English, and much better if she had not brought suit.
Okay, so let's dig into this a little bit, because I'm looking here right now at the Dodd-Frank Act, and the language is very simple, but it says, Deputy Director, there is established the position of Deputy Director who shall A, be appointed by the Director, and B, serve as Acting Director in the absence or unavailability of the Director.
Right, so this is the very definition of a loophole. There was no deputy director as of Friday morning when Richard Cordray reached his last day in office. There was someone who was called the acting deputy director. As his last official act, essentially, the outgoing director named his chief of staff, who had not been the deputy director, as deputy director of the agency, so that she would then become acting director. So he was acting within the language of the statute for sure, but that's exactly what a loophole is. It's when you take advantage of something written into the statute that wasn't anticipated. And it certainly wasn't anticipated that on his last day in office, the director would leave behind someone who would become acting director. It's much more natural to expect the president, who will be appointing the actual director, to make the appointment of the acting director.
But forgive me, I'm gonna put my toe in the water in debating you a tiny bit here.
By all means, with
full acknowledgement that I am not a constitutional law scholar. But
yeah, that's
but,
no problem.
But one wonders, and of course only Richard Cordray can know this because he's the one who made this decision last Friday, but perhaps he was doing it because he was anticipating why leave a vacuum in the office of the director for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau while a new appointee is awaited to be nominated and confirmed by the Senate. Why not do what the statute says? Doesn't matter when, even if it's on his last day of the job, and appoint an acting director.
There would have been no vacuum because, as we see, the president was eager and willing to appoint his own acting director. The point here is that what Cordray was trying to do, by all possible observation, is create exactly this kerfuffle, this fight. He wanted a fight with the president. And, I've got nothing against Democrats fighting with the president or anyone fighting with the president over the Constitution. But you have to pick your spots. You have to pick fights that actually matter, especially in this presidency where the president has behaved so outrageously with respect to executive power on all kinds of things, from sanctuary cities to the Muslim ban. This is a president who the courts need to be checking. And so it's just not a time to play games with executive power. And the honest truth is that everyone who studies this topic of presidential appointments understands that even for independent agencies, whoever happens to be president when the job comes open gets to make the pick. That's why Obama picked Cordray, and it's why Trump will pick someone with a different view. That's just the way the principle is supposed to work. Otherwise, the public never has a say in who gets to run these agencies. We had an election. I don't like the outcome of the election, but the election happened. The president is now the president. And the president therefore gets to make appointments to executive branch agencies when there's a vacancy. It's truly as simple as that.
But isn't there also a loophole in the reasoning that the Department of Justice and the General Counsel at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau itself are offering? Because I'm looking here and they're saying, earlier with Congressman Frank, I was talking about the Vacancies Reform Act, which the president is leaning on, saying that's what gives him the right to put Mick Mulvaney in the office right now. And the DOJ is saying, that the Vacancies Reform Act is not exclusive, but that does not mean it is unavailable. also kind of a loophole, right?
Totally. I completely agree with you. This is a classic case of two very complicated, arcane statutory interpretations butting heads. And a court might decide that, although the court might also just sit on this case until the president nominates and there is confirmed a director, in which case the court will never have to decide it. And courts usually like to avoid making controversial decisions, so we may never even get a decision in this case. My point, though, is that quite apart from the deep inside baseball of which interpretation of the relationship between these two statutes is correct, is a deeper, more fundamental constitutional question, and that is, who gets to name the heads of agencies? And the short answer to that is, it's the president, because these agencies are part of the executive branch. And that's true even for so-called independent agencies like the CFPB, which have some insulation, not because the president doesn't get to appoint, because he does, but just because the president can only fire for a good reason.
Hmm. Final question to you, and this is via a tweet that was sent out by Lawrence Tribe, your colleague there at Harvard Law School.
Mm-hmm.
He says, this is in his tweet, he says, my usually reliable colleague, Noah Feldman, has this one totally wrong. He says, you're ignoring clear and constitutionally unquestionable statutory law to make this a dispute over Cordray's motives and about nebulous generalities. And I just wondered what your response to that is.
Well, you know, Professor Tribe is a great constitutional law scholar, and he taught me that the Constitution is not a bunch of nebulous generalities, but a bunch of core values. And one of those core values, maybe the central core value, is that we the people get to determine who governs us. And in this instance, we the people, for better or worse, chose President Trump. And so he gets to make this appointment. That is a straightforward constitutional principle. It's not nebulous. It's obvious. What's nebulous is the statutory interpretation. And my much esteemed colleague, Professor Tribe, has got it wrong here.
Well, that's Noah Feldman, professor of constitutional law at Harvard Law School. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so very much.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.